So generally, the appearance day of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in one of his varieties of forms, we establish before we proceed in the pastimes of the Lord, the position of the Lord in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Lord Brahma in the Brahma Samhita is referring to the appearance of Lord Ramachandra and the appearance of many other incarnations. And generally, when Srila Prabhupada spoke on the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra, he would always recite that verse from the Brahma Samhita, which is Ramada Murtisu Kala Ni Amena Tistan Anavatara Akarud Bhuvanisu Kinta Krishna Swayam Samabhavam Paramam Pumanyo Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, which is establishing that there are many incarnations that appear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Lord Ramachandra, Lord Nrsimha, and finally it establishes that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead from whom all these avatars emanate. And Srila Prabhupada states that of all the incarnations of the Lord, Lord Ramachandra is the most important one. That he is almost as good as Krishna, practically is like Krishna. But there is a little difference, and the difference is that Lord Ramachandra, when in this world, is adhering to the principles of Dharma. He is establishing the principles of Dharma, whereas Lord Krishna is sometimes establishing the principles of Dharma, and sometimes he is transcendental. Sometimes he is the transcendental Supreme Personality of Godhead who is not bound by any laws of religious principles whatsoever, and who can just act according to his own desire and his own pleasure. And he does so. When Krishna is stealing and is caught, he says, "I'm not the thief, you are the thief," right, to the person that he stole from. In this way, Krishna is above the law, and Krishna also may have relationships with the gopis. Some of them were even married. Lord Ramachandra had only taken the vow to have only one wife. And we see how Lord Ramachandra is the takes his birth in a royal family and is all throughout a prince. It is said just before the coronation, Lord Ramachandra was riding up to the palace of Dasarath to meet his father there, and that's when the griefful moment was there when his father couldn't speak. And it said he came in a chariot, which was a golden chariot covered by white tiger skin and many little bells hanging around the side. So such a typical royal chariot, and he lived very much in royalty. And in that way, although he was very righteous and very much loved, he was also at a distance. Krishna came down from his royal position, became a cowherd boy, and in this way became so much more accessible. And it is said, therefore, Krishna is more merciful than Lord Ramachandra. Furthermore, it is said that Krishna displayed the more intimate pastimes. The sages of Dandakaranya were developing their internal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and desired to have a conjugal relationship. But that was not possible with Lord Ramachandra, who had the vow to accept only one wife. So later, it is said, those sages of Dandakaranya in the pastimes of Krishna came as gopis, along with others who had performed austerities in the heavenly planets and so on. Anyway, the point is made that Lord Ramachandra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead with the particular mission to establish the principles of Dharma, but he's not fully revealing
everything.
Prabhupada said there's no difference between Ram and Krishna, but in the incarnation of Lord Ram, he's just not revealing everything.
And
so it's sometimes difficult to understand Vishnu Tattva, how all these incarnations are separate personalities, but at the same time are not separate personalities because they're all pervading. So it is different than how we are separate personalities. So Lord Ramachandra is considered the principal of all the avatars and most merciful because he performed so many wonderful, intricate human pastimes, which in no other incarnation was performed. So entering into these pastimes and continuing more or less where we left off, Lord Ramachandra in the forest. Alright, we'll skip a little bit because of time constraint. How Sita had been kidnapped. How there was some indication from dying Jatayu, the south. How the two brothers went to the south. And I guess I want to begin with the meeting of Hanuman. Hanuman appeared there in a form which was not in his original monkey form. Rather, Hanuman had taken by some siddhi a slightly different form. And Hanuman appeared in a more human form before Lord Ramachandra and Lakshman. And Hanuman could see that these personalities were not ordinary forest dwellers. What were they doing here in the forest? They looked highly exalted. So Hanuman was very interested in knowing who they were. Now Hanuman didn't just say, who are you? Right? No, Hanuman rather followed the etiquette according to the Vedic literature. Now, we're reading that these rules of etiquette are very refined, and that not only one should speak with certain chosen words of first offering respect and so forth, but even the tone was prescribed. I mean, according to a note on the musical scale, one should address the person in a certain note, in a certain raga even, right? So Hanuman was doing this. He was like actually speaking in the proper tone, with the proper words, with the proper etiquette. And they could see that he was a highly cultured person. So they certainly were very pleased to meet him, and they could understand this is a very wonderful personality. So nice to meet him. Then it was Lakshman who spoke. And Lakshman began to glorify Lord Ramachandra as the crown jewel of the Raghu dynasty. And he began to explain how powerful he was, how righteous he was, and what a wonderful character he had, and what a glorious dynasty it was. The famous Dasarath, who got his name because he was able to fight one demon who took 10 different forms, and somehow or other Dasarath was able to fight him. This demon came from all the 10 directions, and in all the 10 directions Dasarath was able to fight, and therefore got the name of one who can fight like 10 chariots, right? Dasarath in 10 directions. So in this glorious dynasty, Lakshman explained, here is Sri Ram, the glorious crown prince in this dynasty. And I am Lakshman. He said the meaning of Lakshman, of the name Lakshman, the meaning of my name is one who is blessed with the right of service to the Lord. So I am his servant. He said, I'm his servant. He never said, I'm his brother, because if he would have said, I'm his brother, he would have shared in the glory. Right? It's like, even if I'm only half as great as he was, after all that glorification, so it would have been a covered way to put himself up there. So he never mentioned, I'm his brother, not at all. I'm his servant. But my name is Lakshman, and I'm blessed with the right of serving my Lord. In this way, Lakshman introduced himself. So it was a very Krishna conscious, or a very spiritual meeting, I should say. And so there were some signs by which, some predictions by which Hanuman could understand that here was actually the Supreme Lord. So Hanuman understood the identity. Now, we are seeing descriptions of how Lord Ramachandra went with the, finally through Hanuman, linked up with Sugriva and the entire monkey army and all that, and we're going on. Gradually, the search begins for Sita, and eventually the battle towards Lanka. I'll make a little jump. I want to go to Ravana for a moment, because, you know, we have to show the other side now. We have to, like, if you want to really get the drama nicely depicted, you have to have both sides. So Ravana, quite an interesting person. Ravana was certainly already from his birth. His mother was actually envious of Kuvira. So there was some envy living in his mother. And she told her sons to perform great austerities so that they could become more powerful than Kuvira. So her sons, they took up these austerities, and it is said that Ravana's brother, Kumbhakarna, of course, asked a great benediction. He asked the benediction that the world would be freed from the devas, but in the course of asking, the Supreme Lord interfered and made his tongue slip, and an R slipped in the word, which I now forgot due to my bad memory. And that word then became one who is subjected to sleep. So he was always sleeping. It was later in the battle, there were some real pastimes with Kumbhakarna, which are very interesting. But first, Ravana. Ravana became very, very powerful. He became the lord of the three worlds, basically. Although sometimes he was defeated. For one, he was defeated by Bali. Bali was the brother of Sugriva, not an ordinary person either, because actually he was the son of Indra. There's some story how, you know, this, all these Puranic stories are endless, and there's always some little passion, and yeah, there was Bali, who was the son of Indra, but a monkey at the same time, because it was not a real proper affair. We won't get into the details. Whatever may be, Bali was extraordinarily powerful, and his brother Sugriva equally so. The son of the sun god. So these monkeys were not ordinary monkeys. They were very, very powerful. And it is said that long before, Bali's power was very great, because Bali had the benediction that whomever he fought with, he got half the power of that person. So what a benediction. So therefore, Ravana was lording it over the three worlds, but he considered Bali a threat. So he decided, I'll kill this monkey. So he was creeping up from behind and was going to just kill him like that. But Bali saw it, and since his tail was out there, he tied up Ravana in the tail. And Bali would daily go to different holy places to take his bath there. And he carried Ravana in his tail and showed him to all the women, who laughed very loud. And he was thoroughly humiliated. But then made a pact with Bali. Now, it is said that Ravana was, due to his power and his benedictions, feeling so proud and thinking no one could touch him. So he was behaving very outrageous and therefore didn't care. He just raped women in front of their husbands. He, for this, of course, he was cursed. He kicked the sage Astavrata, and for that he was cursed that he would be kicked by monkeys. Right? He was so powerful, being a Rakshasa, having so much mystic power, being so much superior to human beings, that he was told that he would be killed by an ordinary human being. Right? So like this, gradually the curses were building up, and all that would be leading up to the point of his death. And that his heads would be cut by a prince of the solar dynasty. So, because Ravana once killed a king of the solar dynasty, this king was ready to surrender and bow down, and then Ravana didn't spare his life. So just for that he was cursed. So many reasons he was cursed. So finally, the curses caught up. That is very clear. So he was foolish. He was thinking he was beyond these curses. He thought that his austerity was so great that no one could match his austerity. So he was thinking, I'm untouchable by the strength of my austerity. Sometimes we also become a little bit like that, right? We think, I've done so much service, I've chanted so much, I can say anything. Right? But one must always remain very careful in any dealings, in all our dealings in the world, because one could become careless, and that is the beginning of offenses and fall down. So Ravana, one interesting thing about Ravana, which I find interesting, is that he built that staircase to heaven. And it's like tried to, by material means, attain heaven. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur really got into that and just more or less pointed out that everyone's got his little staircase to heaven. Right? Maybe not as big as Ravana's, right, because he was very powerful, but still he just elaborated on his theme how we also have our little staircase to heaven, because we are also thinking that really our happiness will come from material things. So Ravana is more than just a demon, he is also like an archetype, like a prototype for us, a person. There is a little Ravana in us also. So in that way it's not just the terrible demon Ravana, but one can also recognize certain tendencies in Ravana that are also there in us. And therefore Srila Bhaktisiddhanta very nicely pointed that out, that everyone has this little staircase to heaven. And we can see, as long as one is attached to any material asset, right? Kunti Devi said, Janmaisvarya Sutra Sibir Edamadam Madapan Puman, then we cannot approach the Lord with sincere feeling. As long as we are attached to positions of birth, learning, wealth, beauty, all these things, right? Some form of material asset. So Ravana was very, very proud and very, very much convinced of his own prowess, and he was so proud that he never considered that anyone could possibly touch him, right? It was like the thought even didn't occur. There's like, it's no one. There's just no one who could possibly interfere with my supremacy. That was like the mood that he had. So in this way, Ravana took Sita kind of very casually. And who was Ram anyway? You know, some human. You know, like some insignificant human prince. Yeah, there are many wonderful stories, but I'm also time-bound. I mean, I very much like the situation where Bali is killed by Lord Ramachandra, because Bali is shot. Bali was in a fight with Sugriva due to the fact that once Bali killed a demon in a cave, and he said, before he went in the cave, he said, look, I go in this cave, and if there's blood coming out of the cave, then know the demon has won. If milk comes out of the cave, then know I have won. If blood comes out of the cave, close the cave with a big rock, and then, you know, just go on with your life and be happy. So anyway, the demon was dying, but with mystic power managed to make blood come out of the cave. And therefore, the cave was closed off. So Bali thought that his brother was actually trying to get rid of him and take over the kingdom, and therefore hated his brother. In this way, he took revenge, he took his brother's wife, and subsequently, his brother then, he harassed him so much that his brother had to retreat to one mountain where Bali couldn't go, because there was a curse that if he would go there, his head would crack. So that was the problem. So he didn't go there. So daily, Bali would take a very big jump to the sky and just come to that area where his brother was hiding, land on the head of his brother with a big kick, and then just jump off and fly off on the other side and land just outside the cursed area. So in this way, he was really harassing Sugriva to a point of like total despair. So it had come to the point something had to be done. Hanuman was the minister of Sugriva, so there was a natural pact that developed after that first meeting. Therefore, it was decided to kill. Bali had to be killed as part of this pact. Lord Ramachandra would help and kill Bali, and then Sugriva and his army would help to find Sita. Now, it sounds like not so dharmic. It sounds like a deal. Yeah, sounds like, well, you know, what can you do? You know, I mean, I need help, you know, so we just kill this guy. And then, like, you know, okay, we get our wife back, you know. Yeah, so what to do, you know? Like, I mean, you know, sometimes you got to, like, you know, bend the rules a little to get what you want, you know. So it is difficult to see, like, a very noble and dharmic personality in this dealings with Bali. That's why I like it, right? That pastime. Very interesting. And then, you know, like, what happens next is Lord Ramachandra, he goes behind a tree, right? He goes behind a tree, he hides, right? And Bali innocently comes by, and Lord Ramachandra just, like, whoosh, shoots him in the back. In the back. So Bali, right, like, he's just crashes to the ground, you know, being shot in an ambush. And Lord Ramachandra then makes himself visible. And Bali said, like, how could you do this? How could you do this? And are you Ramachandra? And did I hear your reputation? And see, you know, I mean, see how you behave, right? Is this dharma, right? You shot me in the back. You could not come and face me properly. You're such a coward. You're supposed to be the valiant Ram. You could not appear before me and battle face to face, right? This was very low. Very low. So in this way, Bali was like very, very upset. Right? And then Lord Ramachandra, right, was gentle, and he said, "No, Bali." He said, "No, you are making a mistake. You're making a mistake." He said, "I did not deviate in any way from the principles of Dharma. You should understand, first of all, when I was hiding behind a tree and I was shooting you from behind a tree, said that was appropriate. That was appropriate because you are not a Kshatriya. You are an animal." Right? And the Kshatriya kings, they can go into the forest and hunt, and then they hide and shoot like that. So you are an animal. said, you do not have the behavior of a kshatriya. You do not have the qualifications of a kshatriya. You may have power, but you do not have the principles of upholding dharma and protecting dharma. Therefore, I was not to battle with you on the principles of kshatriya dharma. No, or how a kshatriya deals with another kshatriya. You are an animal, and I was to treat you as an animal. So that argument doesn't stand. No, sorry. He said, second point is, he says, you stole the wife of another man. He said, according to the scriptures, you deserve to be killed. Yeah? For that, you deserve to be killed. There's just no, you stole the wife of your brother. There's no karma involved if you are killed. You may be killed, just like that. Karma free. Yeah? So that was another big blow to Bali. And but gradually, Lord Ramachandra convinced him. He also pointed out, he said, you have made a pact with Ravana, who is a totally demoniac person, who is like the personification of adharma. And therefore, since you've made a pact with him, you also have become implicated. Right? So there's another reason you ought to be killed. So he gave him all these reasons, and Bali then submitted. And he accepted. Yes, it was just. And Bali actually surrendered. And said, yes, you are the Supreme Personality of God. And just went back. So it's like, it's just like a moving scene in the whole Ramayana. I'm going to make it quick now. The battle is in full swing. They're already in Lanka. So many things have happened before that are wonderful to describe, and we have no time. Oh, boy. Maybe later in the day we'll take an hour here and there and invite devotees to hear more about the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. Because otherwise, how can we be satisfied today? Well, I finish a few more thoughts.
No,
like, yeah, very short, very short.
No.
Yeah.
He's not here.
He's not here. Anyway. Yes. A few more words. So the battle is going on. I wanted to say a few words about Kumbhakarna, what a personality he was, right? Snoring there, lying there, huge personality, incredible noise, and it was said that it was impossible to wake him up. They tried so many things. He had besides this tendency to sleep, he had a voracious appetite, and that was about it. Whenever Kumbhakarna would wake up, he would just devour anything, flesh, man and animal, right, alike. He would just grab and devour. So the way to wake him up was, besides making incredible noise, putting all kinds of dead animals in front, under his nose, right, in the hope that he would get, that his hunger would outwin his fatigue. And that didn't work. So in the end, to finally wake him up for the battle, they made a fire on his chest. And that did it. That finally did it. He woke up and immediately devoured all those who woke him up. Anyway, that was just a little detail. But even he, after waking up and hearing what was going on, told his brother, he said, return Sita. Everyone told Ravana to return Sita, and he would not return Sita. Okay, in the battle, whatever it may be, you know, like, we won't get into details. Ram, at one point, finally got face to face with Ravana after wiping out his whole army. It is said that Ravana was looking out of the window and saw all these monkeys, and it said there was one Maha-Oga of monkey soldiers. Now, a Maha-Oga is one with 64 zeros, okay? So So if you look at the world population, then there's only like 9 zeros, right? You know, 4 with 9 zeros, and this was a 1 with 64 zeros. So there were a lot of monkeys out there. And Ravana was looking out of the window of the palace. Maharaj is calculating. He's looking out of the window of the palace, and he's thinking like, well, I'll just first kill these monkeys. I'll first get rid of these monkeys, just kill them, and then I'll finish this human. Right? Very casual, but it didn't quite happen like that. And then one after another, his generals, his brothers, his son, all were just killed. Although there were a few moments that the other side was also looking really bad. Anyway, Ram finally shot the arrow in the heart of Ravana and all that, and we leave it at that. Ravana is dead. Good. The real thing, the tragedy, right, is then the whole thing of Sita coming back and Ram not accepting, you know, very nicely taking Sita back, and then after telling her, all right, now you can go. Right? This is when they came back to the continent from the island Lanka. Then there was that scene, still in the south. So she is pointing out that that no, she's innocent and she's ready to enter into the fire to show that she is not been touched by Ravana. We know that story, how at the time when Ravana came to steal her, she did enter the fire, took shelter of the fire god, who then produced an illusory Sita, and all that Ravana ever had was the illusory Sita, and the real Sita was returned unharmed and untouched to Lord Ramachandra. So he took her home and returned to Ayodhya. Everyone's so happy, the coronation, finally it's all happening, Bharat coming out, shoes on the head, everything ecstatic, Ayodhya coming back to life. And then some envious barber. One time the king, Lord Ramachandra, in incognito, as kings used to do, to hear what lived under the people, heard this barber say, when his wife had spent the night outside of the house, that he wouldn't take her back. And the barber said, look, you know, I'm not Lord Ramachandra, right? I'm not taking you back. You spent the night in the house of another man. I reject you. Right. So when he heard that, he realized that he had to uphold the principles of Dharma, reject Sita. Right? And he did. Right? Which is like the most inconceivable tragedy. Right? And if you read that part of the Ramayana, it's like, it's hard to finish that, talking about sentimental, right? That's really draws tears. And Sita was pregnant at the time as well. She gave birth to her sons, and then she took shelter at the sage of Valmiki in his ashram. Anyway, Sita entered into the earth, disappeared. I couldn't live in separation. And then we have these sons, right, who had been taught the Ramayana, the glories, and who come out and preach the glories of Lord Ramachandra, and in due course of time also meet Lord Ramachandra, who then, of course, also breaks down. In this way, there are very deep sentiments. The deepest human attachments are being shown by Lord Ramachandra. He is so much deeply attached to his wife. He's known as henpeck sometimes. But he's so dedicated. And yet, he cut that which was most dear to him, which was killing him practically, right? The principles of Dharma. In the same way, Dasarath gave up his son, right? Although he was dying. So Dharma is like really standing out so much so. All these personalities are just acting so much out of duty that it is truly the secret of Ramraja, Dharma. That is what will make that happy kingdom, which was the opening of the presentation of Satchinanda Maharaj and the verse. So that will also make that then the end. So that we've come back to the original theme, that Lord Ramachandra, on the strength of Dharma, and of engaging all his citizens in Dharma by perfect example and upholding these rules, always established the society of perfect happiness. Vedesu sarvasukhino bhavantu. By following the principles of Dharma which are given in the Vedas, everyone will become happy. Okay. With that I will end.
Did Palladnana Maharaj come?
No, because I see some signs, some movements. All right, so we will end with the presentation. If there are any questions, then we should maybe both sit down there and answer the questions like that. Since we have an extra half hour, we can answer the questions. And I don't know what the idea is, but I saw a finger like... We can answer the questions. I feel like that. Who's the question to?
That's for you, Maharaj. You mentioned that Lord Ramachandra had all these good qualities and the actually morality personifies, we can say, of Dharma. But what is the lesson for us when he killed Bali, shooting him in the back?
No, that is the point, again, that as that an animal, we don't deal... There is a particular dharma of how one deals with animals. That was the only point. That was the essence. So it was not that he was supposed to treat a person who is not qualified in the way of a Vedic king. Between Vedic kings who are both fighting according to principles of dharma, there's a way of fighting. And between wild animals and kings, there's another way of dealing. So dharma gives different injunctions of how to deal with various personalities according to their, or various entities, I should say, according to their position. That is what we understand. For us, of course, the killing is not so much an issue, because in principle we are following in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who did not kill in this incarnation. So we also are not so much inclined to kill, rather we're inclined to kill the false ego and to kill the little demon inside and the little Ravana, the little staircase. We try to chisel at the staircase and make it collapse. Right? We do some CIA work and go in as secret agents and try to break down that staircase, you know, and in that way we kill, but not so much the body. Not 100% that the Vaishnava will never be in a position to kill. He might defend Vaishnavas, or he might defend the deities, and in the course he may even take up weapons. But as a whole, that's not so much in the foreground of our mission. So we do not need to take that so much ourselves, but we can just see how we should be righteous throughout in any condition of life. I mean, that is really the Ramayana. It creates these extreme conditions of life, which we don't even have in our own life. You know, we already at the slightest little pang, you know, material, oh, now the situation is so extreme, now I can abandon Dharma a little bit. You know? And then we see that Lord Ramachandra, in most extreme situations, did not abandon it. And then a few times it seems he did, but he didn't after all. That's the point. He never did. Maybe as another question for Satchinanda Maharaj. You can ask your question to Satchinanda Maharaj.
It's about a point you make.
But Maharaj can answer it better than me.
It doesn't matter if you answer. You just spoke about that have anarthas in our heart, and actually all those demons are actually killed in those pasen by Lord Rama and Sanada, Lord Krishna. So what I actually understood of it, and I want to know if that's a correct understanding, that actually we only can pray that Krishna or Lord Ramachandra is coming and to kill the anarthas in our hearts.
Yes, not only pray, but the story of Garuda and the sparrow and the eggs lost in the ocean is really illustrating that point. Is that the sparrow had to make tremendous endeavor trying to get the eggs back by saying, I will drink the entire ocean. So that was an impossible determination. So the sparrow was really ready to take on that impossible task herself and getting to work. So the devotee really gets to work, like, I'm going to like purify this heart with an ocean of anarthas and I'm going to purify it all. But then in the end, Garuda came and helped the sparrow drink the ocean. So in the end, we need the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Just as we were reading in the mornings in the Gundicha Marjana, and that all the devotees were very much sweeping, cleaning the temple, but somehow or other Lord Chaitanya alone collected more dirt than all the others together. So it's the same point, you see. So ultimately, it is Krishna who is removing the anarthas from the heart. It's not us who are like, you know, scrubbing our heart and it's like I'm washing. We are trying to rectify and to purify ourselves, and then we depend on Krishna to actually take away these anarthas. But maybe Satchananda Maharaj wants to add something, because he's very learned on this topic. Okay, I'm getting down off this seat then. Lord Ramachandra, Transcendental Appearance Day, Ki Jai, Sri Ramachandra Bhagavan, Ki Jai, Sri Ram Nomi Maha Mahotsava, Ki Jai.